John Tanner.
No.
One of my oldest radio friends. I think we started at the same time, except you started on the air and I started out as your operator back in 1961 in Kelowna, British Columbia at good old CKOV.
There you go. Wow.
How did John Tanner first become interested in getting into broadcasting?
Well, it actually started when I was in high school. Well, I guess it started before then. It started when I started listening to the radio when I was growing up in the 50s, you know, just listening to the DJs like Grandpappy Jackson and Friend Frida and all those people that used to be on CKOV. And then when we were in high school, there was a radio drama club there. And up until that time, now, when I was in high school around 59, 60, that era, they had a thing for many years called the Voice of Black and Gold, and the Radio Drama Club used to put on plays on the radio station. I remember hearing those, but by the time we got to the Radio Drama Club, the kind of the play people had departed and there were none of them around, but we still had the Radio Drama Club, and it was basically we would read school announcements on the PA at school, you know, here are your afternoon announcements or whatever. And then we got a bit to do on the local radio station where we were allowed to come down and once, I don't know if it was once a week, I think it was maybe once a month we did this for starters. We had this show, maybe it was on Saturday, I don't remember what day of the week it was. So instead of putting on plays, we just did school news and DJ stuff and that sort of thing. So that's where I sort of got like, wow, this is great fun, I love this, you know. Always liked music anyway, I was always into Elvis and rock and roll. So I was sort of hung around the radio station. There was a guy there by the name of Bruce McGinnis, who was the DJ that was kind of the operator for our show. And I told him I was interested in getting in the business, so he would show me how to operate. And then when the show was on, he'd let me sit down at the board and run the board. So I got to learn how to run the board and play the records and stuff. And then he had actually had this course that he offered to people who were interested. And there was another woman there by the name of Gloria Miltenberger who also wanted to get on the air in that. So she took this course that Bruce had. And so from that, we kind of hung around and got a job. Gloria was on the air before I was. But there was a guy there, there was the manager. His name was Stan Lettner, and he was a real opera freak, and he didn't like rock and roll, so wasn't much of a chance to get a job through him. But the program director's name was Jack Cooper, and Jack was a pretty good guy, and so he hired me to work part-time on, I think it was just on the weekend to start, but I'd do the, actually, and then during the week I'd work the evening shift, so basically it wasn't too difficult. I was on from 7 till 1 in the morning. That's when we signed off. So from 7 till 10, it was all CBC, and you just do the 30-second station break in between or run the tape, and then you prepare your news and stuff. So then at 11 o'clock, you'd read the news and weather and sports, and then you'd do a music show till midnight, and then you'd do another newscast, and then 1 o'clock you'd do the news and then you'd sign off.
What kind of music were you playing at that time?
The music was kind of a mixed bag. I couldn't play all rock and roll, but it was we had different shows. We had a jazz show I did in there, and I did a country show, but the music in the evening was pretty good. You know, we could play quite a variety of stuff. It was sort of more like at that time it was the, you know, the Ames Brothers and Rosemary Clooney and you know, Sinatra, all that sort of mix of stuff. But we'd be trying to sneak other stuff in there too, you know. Now, the only thing is, I've had a little trouble is trying to remember what year. Now, you mentioned 1961, but when I was talking to my an old radio friend by the name of Jerry Gaughan, who worked at CKOK in Penticton, I thought it was around 1960. He said, no, John, I'm sure I came up there in 1959, in the winter of 59, and you were there. You were the guy that came to the door and let me in. So I know it was around 59 or 60, you know. So I know it's around 50 years ago that I started there.
I remember coming into the station as a young kid because my dad had secured a job as a copywriter there when you had first started. By that time, you were on at 4:10 in the afternoon doing You Asked for It,
that's
which was
right.
A total rock show, and I guess probably the first one they ever had.
No, actually, that show had been on the air for years. A guy called Dave Sands did it earlier, and I remember when in 57... when he got a bus together and went down to see Elvis in Vancouver. And then after he did it, I think Walter Gray did the show for a while. Bob Hall had a show on the weekend called Robert's Records, but even Alan Parfitt, you remember him?
He
worked there
Alan.
Too. But somewhere along the way, somebody was leaving, and so, oh, I know who was on before us, Paul Orban, Orban Fossen. He was Paul Orban on TV down here, but his in Kelowna it was Orban Fossen. And he was cool. We used to, I remember Peter Trump and I'd be listening at a place and imitating him and stuff on the air and stuff and taping the show and all that, you know. But again, so I was just doing this part-time thing, but then I got the rock show. But actually, it was I started at 3:30 because I come in at 3:30 and I do a show called Westward Ho, which was the country's music show. And then there'd be news would come on. And then after that, 4:05 till 5, I'd do You Asked For It, which was all requests and dedications. I could rock away. And of course on Saturday night, I remember we had the top 10 songs, the hit parade sort of thing, which we'd tear off the wire and stuff. So that was out of Billboard, actually, I guess. But mm-hmm. then we started tearing it off the wire, and the one on the wire came in a week early. And I remember the week that Big Girls Don't Cry by the Four Seasons was out, and we didn't even have it in the library. So we drove down to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho to buy the stupid record or something. But those were wild and crazy days, too. And then, of course, you came along, and you were my operator, I know, when we did the stuff down at the Aquatic Ballroom.
The beach party. Every afternoon, we took the show on the road sort
That's
of thing.
Right.
And I sat in the Ford Econoline van with little two-turntable console that Art Vipond had made up out of an old Presto tape machine or something. Everything was sort of handmade back in those days, I remember one incident. You might not remember this. Do you remember the time you were bending down to take the water temperature and you were live on air?
Yes, and I got pushed into the pool. But it was Dean Summerfield that pushed me in, I think.
Oh, actually. I remember. I never remembered who had done that, but I remember I'm sitting in the van, and all I can hear is you going, ah, and I can hear the microphone going,
blub, 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 blub.
So I quickly put on a record or something. I think you got out of the pool and took off like a mad wet hen after
chasing
this guy.
Him. Yeah. And I grabbed him, and I dragged him back and threw him in the pool. That was Dean Summerfield, because he was a news guy there, I think, wasn't he?
I think Dean was doing news
time. But it was called the Okanagan Holiday Caravan,
Mm-hmm. There were some great stories about that too, involving several other announcers such as Cal Coleman. Remember big-voiced Cal, the little tiny short guy, and Wayne Barry Heinrich.
Oh, Wayne Barry,
who used to sit out there, and he'd see another competing radio station's car go by, and he'd say, "Hey, I'm available, hire me on the air."
God, Wayne Barry, I'd forgotten about him now. I wonder where he is. I wonder if he's still alive.
The last I heard was Red Deer, but that was about 20 years ago.
Oh, really?
Back to where we were here in the Okanagan Valley, doing our remotes and you doing your afternoon show. And this goes on till about, 1964?
Yeah, it was in the summer of 64 when I was doing the Okanagan Holiday Caravan, and I'd heard that Red Robinson was coming into town. And he was out at one of the campsites, so I headed over there to interview him. And during the time, or before or after the interview, I expressed my interest in coming to CFON, which I'd listened to from Kelowna, of course. It came in at night. So Red said, "Oh, there's a chance there might be something there, so, you know, I'll get in touch with you." I left him my number and that. And it wasn't more than a few weeks later, I was on the air, actually. It was in a noon hour. I got a phone call from at CKOV, and he said, "John, we're going to need an all-night announcer. How soon can you come down?" I said, "Oh, I'll be down tomorrow." No, he said, "Well, in about a week's time, could you start?" So I said, "Sure thing." So,
and that was Mike Cleaver's big break.
That was your break, because then you came and took over U.S. for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you do the evening, too?
The evenings as well. Yeah, and then Saturday night, we were allowed to rock the heck out of it on Saturday nights, which was kind of fun.
Stan Letner had left then.
It was still Jack Cooper, I believe.
Jack Cooper was there, and it's funny, I remember Jack giving me heck for playing too many guitars. He sat me down one day, "John, listen to this. All these music you're playing, there's always a guitar in it." He said, "Where it happened to the violins? Where are the strings?" You know. But it was quite funny.
Do you remember the time the consultant showed up and with his metronome and everything had to match the beat, or was that after you had left?
Maybe I'd left. I don't remember that.
Anyway, this came in and this guy came in. He had a metronome and he set this metronome to a beat, and I don't know whether it was 4-4 or whatever it was, but every record the station played, he said, had to match that beat. Can you imagine how boring that sounded?
Oh my God.
And it lasted for a week and a half, and then that was out the window. Anyway, that's a kind of an aside about things that used to happen back in the old days.
Well, yeah, like Jim Brown, the old original manager, and Marion Buse and Jack Buse. And I always remember Jack Buse with the news. And he always reminded us that news was pronounced that rhyme with his name. It wasn't booze, it was Buse, right? And I still hear on the CBC today announcers and various stations calling it the news and not the news, you know?
Another Americanization, actually.
I guess, yeah.
All right, so Red called, you were ready and raring to go. You get down to Vancouver, and what happens then?
Well, I started in September of 1964 on CFUN, on the all-night show. And I remember it was within a month I got introduced to the public by at a live show. I was we went out to the Garden Auditorium, and there was Paul Revere and the Raiders, Jerry and the Pacemakers, and Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas were all playing. And Fred Lachimo introduced me on stage as the newest CFUN good guy. And that was pretty exciting times. And ended up living within just a few blocks of CFUN just before I
were they on 4th at that time?
They were at 4th and Cypress. Right now it's a
thrift store.
Thrift store, isn't it? Salvation Army thrift store.
Yeah.
It was, what was the other place it was now? It was, I forget what it was in between there now. But the building's basically the same, though. Just the same shell.
Yeah, they've just taken out the walls inside.
Yeah.
So who else was working there when you arrived? CFUN always had a stellar cast of people there. Can you remember some of the names?
Well, yeah, Jerry Landa was working there. Frosty Forrest was just leaving. He was there for about 2 months that I was there, and then he left. Went to NW. From 65, I guess, on, that's how long he'd been at NW. Oh, boy. Of course, Red Robinson was the program director. Tom Peacock was the music director. There was Ed Carl on the air. Fred Lachimo, funny, funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
The news director was Jim Nielsen.
Okay.
Jim Nielsen, news director. It was and Al Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, classic guy. He was such a nice guy. Al was the program production manager. So after you did your shift, you'd see what commercials were assigned. You go down there to see Al, and he was the greatest guy to work with. I mean, he was such a sweet guy, you know, and a shame that we lost him like about 3 years ago now. But I feel good that I've kept in touch with him all the years, you know, and up until just before he passed away, actually, I was in touch with him, you know. And but great guy. You'd sit down, and he'd be reading the commercial, and he'd say, "Tell you what, John, try it this way," and he'd, you know, give you an example and where to accentuate and whatever, and oh, that's great, sounds so much, oh, that's beautiful, great, you know. He's always full of praise and so helpful, and he just made doing commercials a fun thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of remotes, we were always doing remotes. We go out to car dealerships or you name it. There's always crazy stuff going on there because Red was really big on promoting stuff and doing promos for your shows and doing this and that. And one of the fun things we did was in autumn of 66, the new Dodge Chargers came out. And that was the time when Batman was really big on TV with Adam West. And so we got a brand new 67 Dodge Charger, and I went to this rental place, and we got another guy that worked there was Robbie Upton. So I was Batman, and he was Robbie, and we had these beautiful costumes, and we were driving around in this brand new Dodge Charger, black Dodge Charger, which looked very much like the real Batmobile. And some funny things. I remember one of the funniest things, we were driving down the street, actually, and there was this bus at an intersection of Main and 12th, and the trolley wires had come off, and the bus driver's out there, and it's in rush hour, and there's traffic all stopped, and he's out trying to pull the wires. So I pulled the Batmobile up and hopped out and ran over, you know, cape flying. "Can I give you a hand, sir?" And the guy just about had a fit right there in the street, you know, and I'm pulling away on the thing. People are like gawk-eyed, you know. But, oh, yeah, we had so much fun in those days.
Yeah, it was a totally different atmosphere.
It was, you know, and so many bands were coming through then. Remember when the Stones were there and Dave Clark Five and just on and on, you know, group after group, and we were emceeing them all. It was the days when the DJs always emceed, and we got into all the free shows, you know, all the concerts, we got tickets, and it was a fun time.
You did a number of different shifts while you were at C-Fun, didn't you?
I did.
You started out in the evening
I started out all nights, and then I worked, most of my time was 9 to midnight, and I had a thing called the Hour of Flashbacks at 9 o'clock, and so it was usually in the evening when I was on.
The station had monster ratings back then.
It did.
The fact that it went so far at night, like as you mentioned before, we used to listen in Kelowna all the time. That was what we battled against as DJs at CJOs or CKOV. The fact that you could get C-Fun so well up in the valley.
Yeah, it really came up well. But all things come to an end. At the time, starting around the same time that I came there, CKLG started playing rock too. And they were playing more Motown, more blues and stuff. And so they were in competition with us, and they steadily sort of gained the ratings, and we weren't doing that well. So I guess the management decided that was it. They were going to change their format, which they did in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
And so the day after I left the air on C-Fun, I started on CKLG.
Now this was CKLG AM at that
time. Yes, just their FM was just playing classical music, and most of the jocks had left and gone over to LG at that point. So a lot of the C-Fun guys, like Fred and myself, and that ended up over there. So we're on the air on LG AM, and I had an evening show there too. I worked from 9 to midnight there, and at the same time we're on, this is around 67, so around that time the Doors had Light My Fire, and there was a big studio next to our control room, and that's where they used to have, well, all the radio stations had these large studios, even Kelowna did, where they used to have your live bands and that, and then the other side of that was another control room, and that was the CKLG-FM, and the guy in there was John Runge, who was on the same time as I was in the evening, and they were playing classical music and stuff. Every once in a while he'd come over and say, can I borrow that Doors album? I'm going to play the, you know, Light My Fire long version. And he'd get different songs and play them on FM. Well, eventually, it was, you know, lots of people wanted to hear FM, and it was happening in the States. So in 68, spring of 68, LG FM started playing underground music. And so I got a gig over there, too. And so I was on AM and FM at the same time. That was really wild and crazy working there, I'll tell you. I was there a couple of years, till around 68, early 69, and that was around the time the license plates, when they came out in Vancouver, they had letters on them too, and they spelled different things. So I had a feature in my show in the evening on LG AM called Freaky License Plates, and I had a show in the afternoon on FM at 2 o'clock. So on this Freaky License Plates one night, I said, oh, here's another list of Freaky License Plates. A friend saw an FUK. Turned out it was FCK. She called me later and said, oh, it's an FCK, not FUK. And when I said it, I said, oh, someone's seen an FUK. I thought they were censoring those, you know, and that's all that I said, right? But some mom who was tucking her kid in at night and the radio was playing heard that. And we had just been warned the week before about being really careful what we said on the air because our license was up for renewal and they were giving us some static. So I got called into the boss's office the next day. That was Frank Callahan. And Frank said, John, we had this call last night, today from this lady, and heard what you said on the air, you know, what did you actually say? And, well, I'm afraid we're going to have to let you go because, you know, and that was it. Goodbye. So it's funny because right at that time, I just started working at the planetarium, and so I started doing the extra shifts at the planetarium to keep me going until, let's see, now, in the interim there, because, you know, there's radio people always bouncing around and stuff. So I was trying to recollect where I went, and I actually, until 1970, when I went back to C-Fun, which was then CKVN, because after this thing failed, what they were doing at C-Fun, they decided to become a news station. So they changed their call letters to CKVN, the Voice of News. So around 69, I guess I was just working at the planetarium, and then I got a chance as CKVN was going album-oriented rock. There was a thing called the Strawberry Mountain Fair. And so I got a deal going out to the fair with a tape recorder from from CKVN and interviewing the bands, the Seals and Crofts and the Small Faces and bands like that. And then I'd do a report on the phone and send the interviewers down to the station. So then I got a show there. And meanwhile, Fred Latchimo was back there and Tim Burge and Terry David Mulligan came and J.B. Shane was there. We'd worked with him on FM. From back east, we had Dean Agopian and Hal Weaver, who's now deceased. The Iron Buffalo, Don Franks.
Mm-hmm.
A great cast of people there. Bill Ryder, some amazing people there. And that's when, he'd already arrived. When I was back at CFUN, actually, Daryl B. and Rick Honey were a couple of people that actually went over to LG after that for a while, too.
Right.
Both gone now.
Yeah.
So then the deal at CKVN lasted about 3 years, I think, and then the sales manager, Bill Connick, decided that he didn't like what we were doing, the format, so they're going to change the format. So I went back to CKLG-FM in about 1973, and I worked there for about maybe three or four years. I got married in 1975, and when I went on my honeymoon, just before I went on my honeymoon there, the station was on strike. The QP union had, we were just getting really sick of the disco thing was happening. They hired this guy called Simon Ginsberg to be the program director. Now, he actually later went back to LGFM, but when he was at CKVN, we are at CKLG.
LG.
Moved
again,
back
yeah.
to LGFM. Yeah.
yeah.
So Simon Ginsberg's there, and he decides that we're going to go disco. So the disco music starts happening. Well, most of us were just rebelled against that. And so eventually we got threatening memos and things were just going downhill and it was just crazy there. So we decided to go on strike through the QP union, which we did. We shut both stations down for 24 hours and then they went out to the transmitter at LGAM and got back on the air again. But we had them off for a few days anyway. And then we were picketing for a while. And then I got married, so I went off my honeymoon. Screw this, I'm not going to stay on the picket line. I'm going off my honeymoon to Hawaii. So when I got back, the strike was over. And everybody had gone back, and they'd signed a new contract and whatever. So I got hired back and worked there for exactly 1 year. In that year, they were letting people go left and right. And then 1 year to the day that the strike ended, J.B. Shane, Bob Ness, and myself were the last of the union troublemakers that were let go. And so after that, I left there, so it would be 75, 6, 7, no, what am I thinking of?
Says 75 on my cheat sheet here.
75 is the year I was married, so 76 was when we were fired. And so then I went... I got a gig out at CJJC in Langley,
mm-hmm.
and worked there. Worked with one of my old newsmen, Gordon Johnson. He was there, and I worked an evening shift there, and that was fun. They had I actually liked their music. They had rock and they had country kind of mixed. It was a real mixture, and I always liked country music a bit. You know, I used to play it in Kelowna and stuff. I like all kind of music, but. So that was fun worked there a couple of years, I guess. And so that would be, okay, so we're 76, 70, 78 around. And during that time, I got connected with a guy called Don Fraser. And Bob Ness, who had done a thing with Don Fraser on Cable 10, doing jazz, playing jazz music and interviews with jazz people in town, like Mingus and whoever was in town. And then Bob went down to K-Jazz in San Francisco. So Bob... He said, we should talk to John. So I met Don, and we decided to do a rock thing. So we started doing this show, which we called Night Dreams, in 1976 on Cable 10, and it went till 1983. And it was a very big hit. I still get people, you know, in the planetarium actually coming to me and said, hey, you used to do that video show on TV. And this is before Much Music or any of those shows. It was just all volunteer and the whole bit. Used to get the friend Mike here from the planetarium. He'd bring a little laser down there and we'd shine it through a piece of glass and the camera would show the laser effects and we'd play records. We'd show the turntables going around. There weren't many videos back then. I think one of the first videos we played was Gino Vanelli's People Gotta Move or something, you know, really sort of very folky stuff back then. But it caught on, and then the punk thing was happening, you know, late 70s. And so we used to get these videos. Well, every week, JB and I got JB on the show, too, after that. And So he's a nuts. I mean, he's just, his mind is just incredible and very funny guy. And he put together these little skits. So I'd be the main host, and JB would do little bits. And then we got this other woman called Deborah. She'd do bits with JB and stuff. And it was an hour and a half show on Sunday nights, and it was all live. And then we get these punk bands to come down, and there's a thing called the Vancouver Show on CKVU, which I actually did an astronomy show on during that time too. And so some of the guys, Rick Martin and Shane Lunny and people, that would record these bands at the Vancouver Show at CKVU, and then they'd loan us the videos. So we'd had DOA and the Paolas and the Subhumans and all these punk bands, and we play their videos, and they come down to the show, because this time the show was really catching on and people were really getting into it. So the bands would show up and they'd do little skits and sit in with us, and it was just crazy. And then if there was a visiting group from out of town, you know, we had the Specials on there once, and we were talking to the Police on the phone, and whoever was in town, we'd do a phone interview, or they'd get them to come to the studio, and Lena Lovitch came in and joined us, and really some fun stuff, you know. And so that ended in 83. So meanwhile, after I left the radio in Langley, and while I was doing Night Dreams, I think around 76, around the same time I started Night Dreams, I got a gig at CFMI out in New Westminster. They were the NW's station, which is now Rock 101. So I worked there on the weekends on the all-night show, Saturday and Sunday night, or maybe it was Friday and Saturday, I forget what. And I did that for about 4 or 5 years, I guess. I had great fun doing that. I had a thing called the Munchies Hour at 3 in the morning, and it was just really fun working all night. It's always like radio anyway, especially that time of the day or night. And there were lots of interesting people. Like Bob Boving was working there, and Brian Arnold, and Julie Brown, and a guy called Bert Gordon, who was over on AM, which connected with him, and Sterling was working on AM then too. And then they hired Tim Burge, who had worked with many years in LG and that, in FM, to be the new program director. Oh, and John Oliver was there too. He teaches at BCIT. Mm-hmm. So Tim came along, and he was always a good friend, you know, a bit of a crazy guy, but whatever. But he just turned into a tyrant, and he was firing people. That got Boving left, and eventually I got fired and to be replaced by an American announcer. He used to work on KJR. Oh, Robert O. Smith. Robert O. Smith was being big, touted big, you know, Robert O. Smith coming to Rock 101. Of course, John Tanner goes out the door. So I took them to small claims, or to a labor relations board hearing about, you know, this misfiring and being fired for hiring an American, you know. And anyway, I forget what sort of settlement. It was, you know, Ted Smith, the manager, was there, and Al Jordan would came in and to speak for me in the hearings and stuff and that, but yeah, it was kind of a bum deal. And I remember they were accusing me of promoting dope, and they said I had a show called The Munchies Hour, which, you know, was promoting dope, and Frosty testified that he saw me one day with a joint behind my ear and stuff, and, you know, all this was going on. So anyway, so I didn't get much out of that, but I got the satisfaction of me roiking them over the coals a little bit. So, you know, that's the way it goes. It's radio.
still the same today.
And, of course, we hated Tim Burge for many years until, and then Tim had his sex change, and then we kind of reconnected. And now we're pretty good friends now. I'd say we're as good friends as we were in the old days, you know. And he admits that he was under the influence of not nice drugs at the time, and he turned into a bit of a tyrant. So we've left Night Dreams is over 83. We've left Rock 101, and where else? Okay, then I was still working at the planetarium, of course. So when I didn't have a radio gig, I would do more of a planetarium thing. Then I got a gig at CJOR. This is back in the, early 80s, mid-80s. And that was just before CJOR left the Grosvenor Hotel. So they were still downtown in the basement of the Grosvenor, but it was about a year and a half before they left. So I was there for the last year and a half, and then we get the move. And Al Jordan was the program director there, production manager. And the manager was Harvey Gold, and the program director was Frank Callahan. So, I mean, when I contacted Frank, he said, oh, sure, John, you know, because he was my boss at LGFM. So I, you know, worked at OR. And then we moved up to the new First Street station there, which is really a beautiful station, great view. And I remember then Expo was on, which is 86. Mm-hmm. So I worked there through Expo. And then OR changed their format and their call letters to CHRX. Yeah. And CHRX was a modern rock radio station, and then Bob Morris was the program director. We worked with Bob at LG. Anyway, I was there, JB was there, Ellie O'Day was there, some really interesting people, and that's when I worked with Fanny Key for a bit, and met Bill Abbott, Dave Abbott, and all sorts of interesting people. Of course, I worked at OR and stuff. And then I ran into some problems with Bob Morris. I don't know. There was some guy on the phone that one day I made some comment to about how the music was being programmed and whatever and that. And then he called Bob and said, hey, Tanner's said this and that and that. So I remember I got called to the office one day and said, well, you haven't been following the format too well and this and that, so we're going to have to let you go. The old story, you know. So I left there, and I was like, well, I got to stay in the business. So this is like 88 or something like that, 87, 88. So I heard there was somebody said, oh, there's a news shift coming up at in Langley, back in Langley again, mm-hmm. but CJJC had changed their call letters now, and I think they were moved on the dial. They were now AM 800. And AM 800, I had this news shift on the weekends. So I go in there and read news. Well, you know, when you're a broadcaster, you'll do anything. If it's not a DJ, I'll do news just so to stay on the air and keep my chops, and something will come along. So I've been there maybe a year and a half or whatever length of time, close to 2 years. And then we heard that there was the rumor was Dave Marsden. We'd read in the paper that Dave Marsden from CFMY Toronto was coming to town, and he was going to start a new alternative rock radio station. But they didn't know what the station was going to be. It was already a station that was on the air, and there was three stations. One was LG, I think. One might have been CFUN, and the other was the Langley station. Well, it turns out it was the station I was working at doing news. So I was, yay, it's us, you know. So this is incredible. So when they... David didn't just fire everybody and hire a new crew, but he went to all the staff. Great guy, you know, really, this is really thoughtful when a program director does this. And he interviewed everybody there and said, okay, this is what we're doing. This is our new format. We're inviting you to stay on if you like. If you think you can stay with it and handle the music, then you're more than welcome to stay here, you know. And some people stayed and others left. And some of the people that stayed shouldn't have, but they did anyway. And then I got hired on, and, well, it became Coast 800, and we were there for maybe about a year and a half or 2 years. JB was hired there, and some really interesting people. David Hawks was a club DJ. Scott Eagleson, he was from back east, actually. And then we applied for a license to change the frequency and move downtown. So we went to 1040, and we moved downtown, so we became Coast 1040. And this is around 1990, I think, 91. So from 89 till about 93, I was with Coast Radio working with David, and we had just the greatest time. That was just the most fun station to work for, you know. And at the time, we introduced 75 local bands to Vancouver. We played their records. We had them playing at the Commodore. We'd have maybe 5-6 bands in one evening, and we just had sellout crowds all the time when we had these gigs. And unlike the Seafox concerts, when you go there, there was drunken brawls and fights and everything. This crowd was all in leather and colored hair, and they were so nice and peaceful, you know, have a toque, and they were just totally into it, and it was just so much fun. And we met so many great bands and so many interesting people, you know. I mean, one of the guys I met was Jan Gomeshi. Look where he is now on CBC. Mm-hmm. You know, he had a band called, what was his band now? Oh, Moxie Fruvis. Yeah. And we broke the Bare Naked Ladies, got them first played on the air and stuff, and just all sorts of fun stuff. You know, whenever you're at a station, there's always a rock station, there's always so many fun things going on at the time. And so that went along well, and then they wanted to try and get an FM license, and they tried and tried and applied to the CRTC, and that didn't work out. They should have just stayed at 1040. I mean, they could still be doing Coast 1040. And still be really popular. There's a guy in town called Mark Bignall. He works on Co-op Radio, and he's done a a beautiful, on Facebook, he's got a beautiful site in tribute to Coast 800 and 1040, and he has just pages of this stuff, all this stuff on the jocks and things they did. And when I was reading it, I'd forgotten about this. On the last day we were on the air, because the management decided they just weren't making enough money and they were going to fold up. And so the last day that JB and Corey was on the air, Corey White, which is his sort of operator helper guy, and also was on the air with him, they phoned, JB phoned the CRTC, and on the air they put the woman on the air and told her that they wanted to apply for a job because this radio station was folding and they wanted to know if they had any jobs for out-of-work radio people. Well, this woman was slightly bemused and wasn't sure about what was going on, but she went along with it anyway. And this was in this little story that Mark had on Facebook, and I just cracked up. I had to phone JB. I was laughing so hard, and read it to him, and he said, "Oh my God, I've forgotten all about that," you know. But after Coast folded up, it was like, oh God, well, I think that's it for commercial radio. I tried to get gigs at other stations, but nobody wanted an old fart like me. So my wife was saying, well, you're getting so frustrated. You got to do something. Why don't you go out to CITR? I talked about doing that. So mm-hmm. I went out to CITR and learned how to run the board. And for about 12 years, I guess, up until last fall, that's where I was having a fun time. And I actually,
that was a couple of nights a week or one
just,
night a week?
That was every once a week. Mm-hmm. I had a couple of different shifts. Started at 8 o'clock in the morning one, and then I got a noon hour shift, and then we got a shift in the evening at 6 o'clock, and I called the show Son of Night Dreams. And then I got, and JB was really getting frustrated not getting a gig or anything, so I asked him if he wanted to join me on the show. So for about 3 years, he was on the air with me there, 3 or 4 years. But he didn't want to come on as J.B. Shane. He wanted to create a character. So he created the character of Nimrod, which was his son, was J.B.'s son. And he had this slightly different voice, but you knew it had to be him, you know. And it was very funny at first. It got, you know, it was quite hilarious. But JB's had a few mental health problems, nothing major. I mean, he's doing okay now. He's doing better than he was. But I think his altered ego of Nimrod just turned into this real tyrant, and he was starting to put me down in the air and just being really weird and getting kind of nasty and swearing a lot. It got more and more downhill, and finally I said, look, we can't go on with this. You got to clean up your act. But I just said, look, I've got to do my show myself. I can't work with you anymore. So he left, and I just went on, and I had a lot of fun. But last year I just got tired of, and it turned out every other week I was on, so it wasn't as often, but it just got, it was a lot of work, you know. You had to go out to UBC, a lot of research, a lot of energy put into it, and it was fun doing it, but I just thought, I've just burned out of this, you know. And it's getting close to 50 years I've been doing this, so maybe I'll just take a breather. So.
But you are still very active here at the Planetarium. You are doing shows. I took in one of your shows not long ago, and you work with the voice of the amazing Bill Reiter.
Yes.
The two of you put on a magnificent show.
Harold the Star Projector.
Yeah. And not only are you associated with the Planetarium, every summer you get involved, or this is maybe it was your idea in the first place, with the festival on 4th Avenue, which is called either the Summer of Love, and some people call it Hippie Days.
Right.
But this is a very successful and popular event every summer.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, it started when David Dodge, who used to retire here about 3 years ago, and he was the guy that did the shows, school shows. I just did them part-time. He was the full-time guy. He said, hey, my friend Cheryl Easton, who organizes all the stock car, not stock cars, but the little racing car things on 4th Avenue, wants to do a thing to celebrate the hippies on 4th Avenue. And it was 5 years ago. Let's see, 2005. or 6, 5, maybe it was the 2005 summer, I guess. Yeah, it would be. She said, we'd like to, you know, get you up there in a DJ booth. Like she thought, well, why don't we do it across from where Sifon used to be there on Cypress, and by Mark's Work Warehouse. We can close off a few of the side streets. And they had some band up at another street playing there, a couple of bands she'd organized. So I came there with my little, they had a booth set up, and I brought my records. And Craig McCaw and Susan Jacks came down and talked to them on the air. It wasn't on the air, it was just over the, you know, thing there on the mic, but just people came by and stuff. And then so then what we were talking about after it was over, because it seemed to be fairly popular, why don't we get a live band and play? And she said, well, I'm getting permission to get the street shut down, so we won't have any cars or buses, and we can have a stage. So she arranged with Rocky Mountain Sound, and we got the stage up at 4th and U, and we had live bands. And I was so on the phone, on the internet, calling people from old bands and stuff. And so over the years, we've had some really good reunions. I got Mother Tucker's Yellow Duck back together for a gig. We got the original members of the Seeds of Time a few years ago, played a gig there. I had Mike Beddoes and his band The Falcons, and we had who does Transmigration of the Snails? The Melodic Energy Commission had a reunion there, and then we've had the United Empire Loyalists have been playing there with Rick Enns, and Ross Barrett, we've had, and his bands have played, and then we had Susan Jacks and Craig McCaw and Satwant Singh. We had a Poppy Family reunion, minus Terry Jacks. And so we're doing it again this year.
You had, I think, what, 5 stages last year going?
Yeah, there was, Zulu added a stage. So we have one down at 4th and Cypress, and Michael Wilmore is usually the host down there. We've got the one at off Zulu. Then we had one by across from the Russian Community Theater, which was the Afterthought. And then we had the one at Fourth and U moved up to Fourth and Vine. So that's where it is again this year.
Very well attended last year. You had great weather. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Every year's been good for the weather, but last year was really good, and we had the biggest crowds. And so the merchants are just totally sold on it now, and they definitely want it again this year.
Super.
So, yeah, so I've just been, we've got a new guy running the show now, Russ Davies, and works with the Kitsilano Business Association people, and got some really interesting bands again this year, and really looking forward to it.
Slipping back into the radio thing just before we wrap this up, favorite highlight of your career in radio, is there one, or a certain era that was the most fun, the most enjoyable?
Well, you know, going back to Kelowna, I think were some of the most fun days, because those were the early days, you know.
And you could do everything on your own.
Yeah,
pick all your own music.
That's right. Yeah, you're totally on your own there. I remember one day, it was a really exciting day. We were broadcasting from the roof of CKOV, which is on Bernard at, was it Richter Street?
Pandozzi.
Or Ellis? Oh, Pandozzi.
Right at Pandozzi and Bernard.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, gotcha, Pandozzi. We're up on the roof, and it was during the regatta, and one of the highlights of the regatta that year was the Golden Hawks. I'm trying to remember what year that was. It was, you know, maybe around 62 or something like that.
I think, yeah, it was early 60s.
Early 60s. It was before 64, and the Golden Hawks were doing this incredible, and these are F-86 Sabre jets, right? And they were flying down Bernard Avenue, and they were low. As a matter of fact, they were so low that they were blowing out glass windows on Bernard Avenue. We're just going, bam, you know? Well, that was just, I mean, you're standing there, and this jet is just flying over. You just hardly look up, and it's just, boom. Almost at street level. It was crazy.
I remember my dad taking a lot of flack for that because he was part of the organizing committee that brought them there, being an ex-Air Force
guy, yes.
And he took a lot of flack for all of those broken windows.
Oh, no. Well, your dad, Bill Cleaver, he was one of the nicest guys. I'll always remember your dad, and I'm really sorry that I didn't get to visit him before he passed away just a few years back now, you know. But
within a week of his 95th birthday.
Oh, my God, really? Yeah. Well, he was the sweetest man. He was so nice, you know, and you could, anytime you had any problems, you want to talk to him, he was just right there, you know. Now, those were good days. You always remember, I guess, the early days, you know. But when you start putting it together, like there's every different station I've worked at has been a highlight, because then, of course, going to CFUN, I mean, that was the
epitome. That was like the chum of the West.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was the biggest deal in the world for me, and just to be able to go to see all those concerts and meet all those rock people and that, you know?
Coming from a town of 16,000 people to Vancouver, that's quite a jump in a career.
Totally, yeah. It really was. So, good for one's ego, for sure. And right now, when I'm doing the Summer of Love and I'm phoning people and emailing mostly now, it's people that were playing back in those days in the 60s that I contact. And, you know, like I'm just talking to a guy over in the island that had a band called Sleepy John, and I know he's getting together with another guy. They're going to be playing with us and that. And I was just talking to a guy who lives in Madrid now. He had a band called Orville Dorp, and his name's Jack Smith. He's kind of a blues singer, and he wants to come. We might work on that, if not this year, next year. But so there was lots of highlights at CFUN, but I guess one of the biggest highlights, well, of course, when I went down, you know, I sort of missed a little gap in there, but when I met Red Robinson on the Okanagan Holiday Caravan, it was the summer of 64 when the Beatles were playing in Vancouver. So I contacted Red, and whether it was through him or what, I don't know how I got a ticket for the concert. But so we'd arranged that I was going to meet Red at CFUN to get a ride to the concert because he was going to be the MC. But before we went to the concert, we went out to the UBC hospital because Fred Latrimo was supposed to MC it, but he had mononucleosis at the time and was in the hospital. So we went out there. He had to talk to Fred. I know he had to something. He wanted to know what Fred wanted him to say at the concert. He had some message. And so that's when I first met Fred, who looked very yellow with mono, if you've ever seen anyone with mono. So then off we go to the Beatles, and he drops me off outside Empire Stadium. And, you know, I go, well, just pandemonium. Of course, they were on stage for 20 minutes, and it was a riot there. But in 1966, through CFUN, I went down to Seattle to see the Beatles. And that was their last tour, and they were down the West Coast. They ended in L.A. a few days later. So it was about maybe the fourth to last concert we saw. They did two shows in Seattle. One was an afternoon show, and I had tickets for, I think we were about the second row center at the Seattle Coliseum to see them. And, oh, man, I'll never forget that. I mean, the sound was so amazing. And I had a tape recorder with me from the newsroom because I got to go to a press conference after the concert. Or maybe it was before the concert. Anyway, so I got to, you know, ask them a few questions and stuff. I got that on tape. And I recorded a bunch of songs, which I still have to this day. I've got to put on a CD. I've been saving those for I don't know what. But I played them on the air a few times. But incredible. And the sound still sounds so good. I can't believe it, you know, because we're right so close. And you could see in the concert, like George Harrison was looking over and giving Paul dirty looks. And they were all kind of, you could tell that they were not getting along too well. And of course, that was their last tour together. You know, I can see why now, why they were sort of glaring at one another occasionally. But very funny. Lennon especially was very funny, especially between songs, some of the things that he did. So that was a highlight, you know, to get to go to a Beatles press conference for sure. Another highlight was maybe just some of the stuff in the late 60s, emceeing shows like The Doors, being on stage with The Doors. And never forget that one because Terry David Mulligan and I were the MCs of that show, and we were told at the start of the show that the Doors were not doing an encore, so don't ask for an encore, you know, there's specific instructions. So the concert was over, and we'd done, at least I personally had gotten into some pretty heavy psychedelics for that show, so I was finding my way up on the stage, and Mulligan had gotten there already, and he was on stage, and he said, "The Doors, wasn't that incredible? Let's have them back. Who wants The Doors back?" Well, of course, yeah, and there's this big mob of people start heading towards the stage. Well, I got up there, and I'm like, "What'd you think of The Doors?" And meanwhile, there's all these people, and I'm realizing, oh my God. And then the police come out, and people are climbing up. It's a really high stage. People are climbing up on the stage, and the cops are starting to push people off the stage. Well, I freaked out, you know, very stoned. And I ran up to the cops and said, "No, no, no, just get people to sit down on the edge of the stage." So, you know, okay, we got people to sit down, and it sort of calmed down a bit, and it wasn't too crazy. But, oh, God. I went to this after party afterwards where a bunch of the Doors were, not Jim Morrison. And it was at the Out to Lunch Bunch house on 7th, 3rd Avenue. And the manager of the Doors was there, and he saw me. And, of course, he said, "You were the one that said it," because he saw me up on the stage. He thought I was the one that said, "Do you want the Doors back?" But I said, "No, no, it wasn't me. It was Mulligan, but he was out to kill me." So I left the party right away. He was so mad. Other highlights, I guess, well, you know, that CHRX gig I did, DJOR, that was really a fun gig too. Mm-hmm. And of course, Night Dreams was such an amazing time. I'll never forget that. I'm still, there was a movie called Bloodied But Unbowed that just opened, a documentary. Went to the press showing of it at the Docks of Film Festival last week. The producer, photographer, the the woman that put that together, her name was Suzanne Tabata. Mm-hmm. She was on our Night Dream show. We got her from CITR to come and join us on the show. Lovely lady, really, really smart. And she was into all that punk scene and stuff. So she has this documentary about the punk scene. She's got DOA, she's got the Subhumans, all the bands from that era, Pointed Sticks, they're all there. And it's an excellent movie. And she's got clips from Night Dreams. And for the first time on a documentary, I see my name in the credits there. It was quite amazing. It was quite an honor. And the theater was just full of all these guys from the bands and stuff. It was such a night. Anyway, that was a big highlight, the punk scene, too. Because, you know, the thing is, I've been through so many different eras, from the rock scene, all the different genres of music, and I've loved them all, you know. But Coast 1040, I think, was the last one of the most exciting times, because we used to have so many great concerts at the Commodore, and such a good turnout. And I get such a loving feeling from people when they reminisce about Coast 1040, about what a great station it was.
And you know? David was a very good friend of mine, and an amazing person. We worked together at Chum back in the 70s.
Really? But do you remember he was Dave Mickey on Let's Go?
Yes, the screaming Dave Mickey.
Yeah, that's right. And he's got an internet radio show.
Yes, which I am one of the most dedicated listeners. I think every Saturday night there I'm dialed in to listen to Dave no matter what I'm doing.
Is that right? Well, I'll have to catch him, because I haven't heard him yet. I've heard he's on, but you know. So, you know, Coast 1040 was definitely one of my highlights, but then even being at CITR was fun. We've had some good times out there at UBC, too, and there's a lot of great people that work there.
You've mentioned an awful lot of names as we went through with it, which is great, because some of these people have slipped other people's memories. Who are some of your favorite people that you worked with?
Well, when I look back to Kelowna, like, I remember some really interesting people, like Pat Thorogood. He was a really cool newsman. And Paul Orvin Fossen, he was a great guy. I loved him, too. And all the people at CKLV, I really liked there. Dear girlfriend Gloria, mm-hmm. Gloria Miltenberger, who has since passed on, she was a sweetheart, too. I guess Walter Gray is still around. Mm-hmm. His brother, Chick Gray, just passed away about a year or two ago. I knew him from high school. And Walter, I know well. And Bob Hall, I guess, passed away mm-hmm. a few years back, too. But, you know, so many good people. Do you remember, there was a guy, I'm trying to remember his name now, drove an Austin Healey. Oh, do you remember Dave Neufeld? He drove a little MG. Now, where's Dave Neufeld? He was a news guy.
I lost track of him years ago. I have no idea what happened.
He was a jock. I remember he did You Asked For It, too, at one point there. Yeah, I'd like to contact with him.
Al Jensen was another.
Oh, yeah,
fellow.
Al Jensen, yeah.
And Kid Jensen, his son.
Well, that's
who
right,
went on
Kid
to
Jensen.
Such, I taught him the board at CKOV.
That's right. Well, and he did You Asked For It for a while, too, didn't he?
And then he moved on and went to Radio Luxembourg and then the BBC.
BBC.
I believe he's still at in London doing a radio show for an independent network now.
Yes, he is, I actually talked to him on the phone. It's funny, I somehow heard he was coming to town. I actually phoned him and talked to him in London there once, and he said he's coming out here and he was going to give me a shout, but I never heard from him. So, but you know, he's in another world, you know, for sure.
He's up there on the stratosphere.
Oh, he is, because I mean, when they on the air there, they had millions and millions, 8 million people listening to them.
I have some great pictures of him. He looks to be about, I think he was 14 when I taught him the board. I think he was on Radio Luxembourg by the time he was 16.
Yeah, very young.
With his big mop of blonde hair.
Right. coming to Vancouver, of course, you know, people that I miss, I guess Al Jordan is one of my favorite people from there. Rolf Johansson's another jock I'd forgotten about there, too, yeah. And I still see Red, and Red has the Red Robinson has these meeting groups, you know, as you come to now, maybe twice a year now. We're going to start having them again, which is good, because there was, 75 people there at the last show. And so many people that I remember from CFON. Neil Soper was there, and just a lot of really cool people. At LG, you know, I guess JB was one of my biggest friends, and we still keep in touch. We're still pretty good friends. And Pam Burge now, which is formerly Tim, we keep in touch too. I don't know, keep in touch with any people from, well, JB worked with me at CHRX. But at Coast 1040, I try to keep in touch with Scott Eagleson and David Hawks, and there are a couple of guys that I see now and then. But it's hard, you know, unless you're working with those people, it's hard to keep in touch. Sterling Fox and I keep in touch, mm-hmm. too. We get together quite often. And but, you know, a lot of our dear radio people have left us,
they're
you
gone.
Know. I remember I was talking on the phone to Daryl B. the week before he passed away, and the same length of time to Rick Honey. We were actually going to get together and do an interview, Rick and I, and then bang, he was gone, you know.
Daryl was an amazing person. I worked with him several times at Chum.
Did you?
He was an amazing guy.
Yeah. Really cool guy, you know. And I have a feeling, we had a theory that it was Rick's death that put Daryl over the edge, because Daryl and Rick were really close back in Winnipeg, especially where they started. I mean, they were good friends of Burton Cumming and all those people back from the Guess Who days. And Daryl was pretty sick, and he wasn't doing well. And he knew that Rick was sick, and I think it was within a day or so had died that Daryl went too.
Yeah. Very sad.
Yeah, I know. Another guy I really liked too, and I always wanted to write a book about my experiences.
Everybody says that's why you're doing this.
Well, I went and did a whole bunch of interviews with Jack Cullen because I knew that he wasn't doing too well. Actually, when I got hold of him originally, he was doing quite well, but then at the end he really went downhill. And I know Sterling Fox and I were out there to see him just within a day or so of when he died, you know, and he was really happy to see us, too, because he was pretty out of it. And when he saw us, he was like, oh, smiling and shaking our hand and stuff. But I got some good interviews, and I got a whole bunch of tapes, and he gave me a whole bunch of pictures that he said I can keep. And he even gave me permission to use, in my title, I could use the title that he had for a book that he wanted to write if I wanted to use that and stuff. So I've kept all that stuff. I've stashed it away. So maybe down the road we can put it to some use, you know?
Mm-hmm. Does John Tanner listen to any radio these days?
Yeah, I do. It's funny, when I'm in my car, I kind of tune around, but I've been listening to AM 650 a lot lately. I kind of like the oldies they play. They're one of the only stations on AM. When I can get it in my car, I try to listen to CITR, but mostly I listen to CBC. Mm-hmm. AM or FM, I like the AM for the news, but they do play some interesting music, and they do have an FM signal. And FM on CBC 2 is actually not bad now. I was disappointed when they stopped playing classical music, but they're playing a little hipper stuff now, and a lot of interesting, good Canadian bands you'll hear on there. I noticed there's a station in Chilliwack that broadcasts in town that now, it used to be XFM, now they've got the C-Phone call letters, mm-hmm. 104.9, they play oldies too. But, you know, I guess when I'm on my computer, I always put it on Radio Paradise. I don't know if you've tried them.
Yes,
but they are the most, you know, they remind me the most of what LGFM used to do. You know, you'll be listening and I'll hear something by maybe Traffic, and then right after that, he'll Sam Cooke, and it just, you know, it's an amazing mixture of music that you can
imagine. But it works.
But it really works, you know? And, I mean, you can hear just about anything you want on so many different stations.
On the internet,
The Radio Paradise, I don't know what it is about that station, but they really, and just some guy and his wife, I think, broadcasting from their house, you know.
You can do that, too.
That's
Look at how
true.
Simple our recording rig is here today compared to what we would have been using back in the 60s.
I know.
Dragging
I know.
Around a suitcase-sized Ampex tape machine and a mixer about the same size.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so the technology is amazing these days, and that is, I think, is what is bringing interesting radio back, the internet
mm-hmm.
radio.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
I guess I've fallen in love with cruising, too, on ocean liners. About the year 2000, I got a gig doing astronomy lectures for Holland America, which I did for about 6 years. My wife and I got to travel all over the world for nothing, and all I had to do is pay for occasional drinks, but everything else was free. And I used to do talks and slideshows. Now I do PowerPoint. Actually, I haven't done it for a few years, but even after I stopped doing it, we're still out there. We're going to go down to LA on a ship in October, but take the train home. But the less flying, the better. But as far as radio, well, as I say, if I can get a gig doing the oldies station for a while, that'll make me happy. But, you know, you reach a certain point, you figure, well, when you're over 65 and you can still do stuff, but, you know, there's a lot of young people out there getting into it now. But the music, of course, is so fractured and all over the place now that it's not the same as the old days.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll always love my old favorite artists, Gene Vincent, Eddie Cochran, and Elvis, for the oldies. And all the old R&B stuff. I've really been discovering old R&B, you know. And well, Bill Ryder's got a radio station now, WGAR, is it?
Mm-hmm.
On the internet.
Yes.
And he's got a show, his Groove and Blue show. Well, you know, what he calls it, but he's...
As J. Robert Wood used to say about some of the announcers down at Chum, for example, the guy who used to do the early morning news before I started there, he said he can read the phone book and I'd listen. Bill Ryder could do the same thing.
Yeah.
Bill has a most amazing voice.
He does. Another good radio friend of mine who doesn't do radio anymore, his name is John Wilson. And he worked at CJOR. I don't know if he did anything at NW, but he's got the most amazing voice. And he was one of the top DJs around the early 60s down in L.A. doing talk radio. And I know he worked back east for Jeff Sterling was it Chaume in Montreal? And he used to do crazy... He didn't like rock and roll, so he'd make fun of the records, but he had such a funny wit about him in that they loved him, you know? And... So I keep close touch with John. I met him through Al Jordan, actually. But
some amazing talent. A lot of it gone already.
A lot of it gone, yeah. Mm. But thank goodness that Red's keeping our little radio get-together.
Yes, that, I think people really appreciate that, at least the people who go to those those things. And yeah. We had a great time at the last one. It just seemed to go so fast, the
I
time.
Know. Yeah. Yeah.
John Tanner. Thank you very much for the great memories and continued success in your endeavors here at the Planetarium and with the Summer of Love festivals.
Yes. Well, thank you, Mike Cleaver, because as I say, as you said, we go back to day one in Kelowna, and that's 50 years ago. So, God, it's hard to believe. Time flies, eh? You're looking like a young old dude.
And you too, sir. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Ciao.